Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, Season 3, Episode 8, where we discuss Dark Water, the latest Doctor Who episode from the wonderful BBC. I am Dolly Domofsky, as usual, one part of the amazing crew of four wonderful companions, the Doctor. Joining us, as always, Stephen Strum.
That's me.
Sean Norton.
Hello.
And Marcus Beer.
Just call me Missy.
Just call you Missy Beer. And we have a huge show today because there are a lot of thoughts. I will start off right away by denouncing Into the Forest of the Night. I think all of us had mixed bad feelings about that episode.
There's nothing mixed about any of our feelings about that fucking episode.
I think universally disliked.
Tons of shit crammed into 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Like the rest of the human race, something bad happened, but we're just going to forget about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh, that's what the Doctor's all about, right? It's about telling humanity how shitty they are.
Well, I'm hoping that at some point we can just forget about Stephen Moffat.
Hey,
we're going to get to that now. Let's talk right about Dark Water, which is the first of the two-part season finale of Doctor Who. Two-part.
There's only one more episode?
There's one more episode. It's a 60.
Until Christmas.
60-minute episode. Really quick recap for those that are just joining us. Danny Pink gets hit by a car and dies, and Clara wants to go back in time and change time and rescue Danny. Doctor says she can't, although they can zip around in the TARDIS to the next moment in time where their paths will cross, which happens to be in the very near future, apparently. They go to this place called 3W, which stands for three words, and apparently the bodies and the souls of the dead are all located here. The bodies are just skeletons that are decomposing in dark water, and the souls are in a sort of database or somewhere.
A matrix slice.
We come to find out it's a matrix slice, and it is Gallifreyan technology, Time Lord technology. Yeah, the bodies in the water tanks, the bodies of the deceased, are actually Cybermen being formed with the memories and the souls of the dearly departed shoved into this hard drive, this giant database hard drive. And Missy is behind it all, but she's not Missy. She's the master.
The mistress, the master.
She's Missy, M-I-S-I. And no, there was, I think, everybody's head collectively exploded on Saturday. I know one person in our group was vehemently upset or ready to drop nukes on Stephen Moffat.
I know. How could they kill Danny? I was fucking livid.
Anybody who had recently lost somebody and watched this episode must have been profoundly saddened. I actually, not that I've lost anybody, but that was a hard first 5 minutes of the episode, I gotta say.
No, I have, and that is 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. So.
Really well organized, and it was interesting that Clara said, you know, it was just way too ordinary of a death. It's not right. You know, he can't go this easily. You know,
right.
So I want to do right away. You know, just hop in with our initial thoughts, and I'm going to start with you, Sean, because you've got to go. You've got to leave us a little bit. You've got to depart a little bit early, but I want to make sure we get your thoughts in, and then we'll jump into the antithesis, I think, of...
I was going to say, maybe we could all just focus on the good first before we focus on what's going to divide us.
It makes sense to have a very short conversation before we get into the meeting.
So I was a big fan of the episode in, you know, as a whole. I was a very big fan of the first 10 minutes, mm-hmm. all the pre-credit stuff. You know, everything that happened with Clara and the Doctor and Danny, the blink and you miss it, Mr. Pink demise, or not demise, I guess, depending on how that plays out. And then all the stuff on the volcano planet that wasn't really the volcano planet. Mm-hmm. Was just, I thought, really, really, really well done. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because normally, if it had been like, oh, it was all just a dream, I'd be very angry. But I thought it was a very clever way to get out of that situation while also showing it. Because really, if that had actually happened, who knows how they would have written themselves out of that corner, right?
Right.
But instead, we get to see these fiery performances, pun intended, from from our two brilliant leads, which is just, you know, more of the same this season. You know, all the actors are quite on point. You know, Capaldi continues to elevate the material that he's given. And yeah, I like that a lot. I liked, you know, the travel to where they ultimately wound up in, you know, what wasn't actually the Nether Sphere or whatever that was. I love the callback to the old Time Lord tech. Really, I could just keep going on all the little things I liked, but, you know, in general, I'm a big fan, so I'm going to let you or Steven go, because I'm just going to, you know.
All right.
I think it'd be best if one Marcus went before me. Like, you can talk first, Ellie, if you I just what is okay? First off, what is that like?
Weird feedback
going into
not me. It's got to be Marcus.
I wonder if he's trying to.
His wife texted me to tell me she's on the way home.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say it's a Cybermen, or apparently
it's just angry censoring all of our positive
phone getting ready to deal with what I'm about to unleash.
Should we just let him go, Steven?
Yeah, because I kind of want to. I wouldn't mind going last because I think I'm going to be somewhere in the middle between where everybody else is.
We're
going
to need to recover anyways after him. So go ahead. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, first 10 minutes, really, really good. Like some of the best, first 10 minutes of any season or any episode. Danny's death was a total shock. I mean, obviously, when the line went dead, it's like, oh, Missy's kidnapped him. Mm-hmm. She may have done that, but you know, Clara trying to, you know, with the post-it notes and trying to tell him that how much she loved him, and just, you know, that was really, really emotional. And then Clara just, you know, 2 weeks without the doctor.
That's my fault that time.
that may be Missy calling Steven.
Yeah,
she has this number, you know, like she's nobody's supposed to have this number, but apparently she found it. That's weird.
My turn. All right, go ahead, Marcus. Continue.
But yeah, the whole, you know, 2 weeks without the doctor, she's calling him and he's not responding, and then he eventually picks up, and she, you know, this forced cheerfulness and taking the keys, and I mean the dream sequence. I'm glad it was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it was a dream, and that was just really corking. Really just great. And then the rest of the episode happened. Look, Doctor Who goes to heaven. Hello, kiddies. The Doctor's going to heaven. All right. So that one, I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out in my head. So basically, heaven is inside the Matrix, which is obviously old school TARDIS, Gallifreyan technology. But it also is holding... The Matrix has the Cybermen, and we don't know what the Cybermen are made of, whether, you know, because apparently they just have bones underneath them, which is not the Cybermen I know. That's all they have left is the brains. They get rid of all organics, and it is organics because of the marrow inside them. So, all right, so I don't know what they're doing in there. Not only that, the Matrix is inside what looks like St. Paul's Cathedral. Mm-hmm. So you go out the and look, I'm in the middle of London. And there are Cybermen now streaming out. Apparently the budget couldn't stretch to more than 3 Cybermen at a time. but it was, you know, and it's like, okay. And then it's obviously, you know, let's talk about Missy. And let's talk about the fact that Missy's short for mistress and she can't call herself the master anymore. This is after she's had her tongue down the doctor's throat. Ooh, creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, this just reinforces Moffat lies.
Yes.
Moffat's a useless twat. And he's also an egotist who likes to just spend time instead of, you know, he's like so eager to put his stamp on Doctor Who canon. He's going to take his probably very small Scottish penis out and piss all over everything. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him that by the end of the next episode that this is all a dream, or this is a plan that is, you know, not really the master, and, you know, it's part of the botched regeneration, because you can't trust Moffat as far as you can throw him. But did it have to be the master? Couldn't we have had somebody new? Isn't it about time we had a new big bad who can come in every couple of seasons and has some, you know, really good plot lines? Because let's face it, we need it. We've had the Daleks this season. We're having the Cybermen. We've revisited Silurians. We've revisited practically everything. We're even revisiting stuff from within the reboots, you know, from 2005. Could we not have had something original? Or, as I've said before, if we're going to go with a female Time Lady, because that's the words they used, don't put bananas on me, ladies. Time Lady is the terminology they used. If we're going to have a Time Lady, why not the Rani? I mean, again, we know Moffat lies. So he's lied. He says, you know, he's lied saying, you know, so X, Y, and Z, oh, the Master's not coming back, and here's the Master, and blah, blah, blah. Well, why can't we have another quality character? And not only that, why can't we have a great, unique, original female character? Why has it got to be a character that's been a bloke for 50 years? All right, we're going to change it up. Now we're going to make this into, we're going to make him into a woman, and the first thing he's going to do is stick his tongue down the doctor's throat. I mean, it's really just, it's pulp storytelling of the worst kind. I threw my hands up because, you know, so yeah, I had the misfortune of seeing the picture on Facebook with Missy and the Cybermen, and I knew they were in the finale, and that was upsetting enough. But yeah, look, first 10 minutes were great. The Danny Pink bit where he was, you know, remembering what happened while he was a soldier, and it turns out he killed a child. That was pretty emotional. The actor's performance when the child was the one who requested to meet him, and he's trying to deal with that. That was really quite emotional. Great acting. And there's been great acting from, you know, Clara and the Doctor this season. Unfortunately, the writing has just failed it over and over again. And this to me has been, without a doubt, on the whole, the most disappointing episode of Doctor Who since it came back. I mean, this is down, you know, it's down there with some of the worst Colin Bakers, to be honest with you, in my opinion. And I know it's not over yet, and I know that this time next week we'll have another conversation, and we'll find out that at the end of the day, it was all a dream, and Clara's going to get up, go to the bathroom, and Danny Pink's in the shower.
So I...
yeah, they really did do a lot with the dream patch, and then the Time Lord Data Slice stuff. It does make me pretty, not concerned, but I don't know. I think there's a double bluff coming.
Something is definitely... Yeah, I agree. I think something's definitely going to happen. Now, I really enjoyed this episode. I loved those opening minutes. That opening sequence was terrific with Danny and Clara. And to see her, she was more shocked than she was upset, right? You didn't see her tears at all. And there were some beautiful shots of her running to the scene of the scene of the accident, and, you know, it kind of pans around, and it had already happened, you know, the 2 weeks prior. And so just wonderfully, a great setup. You know, we've had this love story that's been kind of blossoming with between Danny and Clara, and the doctor he's kind of hated Danny because they're basically the same person. They're both these soldiers. And I think that we started to learn last week a couple weeks ago, and now this week, that the doctor's started, you know, he's now, I guess he's on much better terms with Danny, and he's also saddened to see him pass. And so that whole opening sequence was terrific. The keys, I know everybody's been bringing it up. You open the TARDIS by snapping your fingers. You don't really need the keys. So I wonder if there was something, if there's something there that we're missing, or that Moffat still has a bluff for. I'm not 100% sure, but That idea, the whole key idea was kind of interesting. How many? 7 keys? Is that what there was? Or 5 keys? I couldn't quite remember. And then it goes into the heaven sequence. And I thought, wow, they're actually going to take Doctor Who into mysticism and spiritualism and heaven. And the way they talked about with Seb explaining to Danny what everything is in the afterlife, I think that is all a setup. I think that's a big it's a big lie. That's the double thing. There is no heaven. It's the doubting doctor who has doubted everything that hasn't been 100% scientific. He doesn't believe in an afterlife. He believes when people die, they die. And he brought that up before in previous episodes. And so I think this is going to be a somewhat of a justification to that, a little bit at least, in that maybe there's no afterlife, but you can still kind of rescue someone's brain. I mean, he did it with River, right? River was dying and he kind of transferred her into, you know, over in the Silence of the Library, that 2-part episode, that episode. So I think there's still opportunities to do what they're trying to do without actually, you know, diving headfirst into spiritualism. But I love the Cybermen in the water. I thought that was a great idea, the organic water. And you knew right away when they showed them that's what was happening. They were actually Cybermen there, or going to become Cybermen, only because that was ruined for us with all the previews. Clara trying to talk to Danny, I thought that was brilliant. And her telling him, don't say I love you, because, it's just going to make me hang up on you. Say something that Danny would say. And he wanted her to hang up on him. He wants her to forget him. He wants her to be... be able to move on with her life. And so he says, you know, I love you. And she basically hangs up on him at that point. She knows. And at the very end, I thought it was really interesting when Danny's presented with the choice to delete himself. And he's sitting there just about to hit the delete button on the iPads. By the way, there's iPads in the afterlife, supposedly, because they have Steve Jobs there. He's about to delete himself. And in the reflection in the tablet, in the iPad, you see the little boy that he had shot. So that's going to be obviously spilling into the next one, the next episode, where I have a feeling that Danny is either going to get into one of the Cybermen bodies and become a kind of, you know, human Cyberman hybrid type of thing, I guess. And, or escape out of this sphere, this hard drive. But, I think there's a lot of spins that we can take from that. And finally, my thoughts on the mistress/master. I don't have a problem with it. We kind of called it early, like from the very beginning, we were saying that there's something up with this, whether there's Valyard influence, or there's, you know, we would love Irani to be included or something, or was she part of the TARDIS? We don't know. She does carry a little bit of, was the actor John Sims? Is that who the actor was that played the last Master, who I felt was brilliant? He and David Tennant had this love-hate relationship. I mean, he as the Master actually loved Tennant's Doctor because they were the last two of their kind, and so that's why he never actually killed him. And the same with the Doctor to him. And so I think Missy, her character, kind of carries over some of his mannerisms and how he was very wily and very quick and had a lot of energy and a lot of tricking, you know, a lot of trickeration. So I'm interested in her as a master. And yet at the same time, you know, I mentioned we have the female doctor in Clara, and that was great. That was fun. She proved her point. I definitely believe we're seeing the last of her. This is probably her last episode, this upcoming one. Because I don't think they can take it any further. I don't think her and Danny are going to be, you know, everything they've gone through isn't going to be able to last any further. So now we're having a female master in there. Again, I don't have an issue with that, but I think it just almost feels a little Moffat forced. And I can understand what you're saying, Marcus, in that Moffat wants to put his special touch on everything instead of leaving it be and letting it organically build up. So on the one hand, he did it great with Clara, but he may be, I think he's, there's issues with Missy's character. We almost know too much about her, I think. And so, yeah, I'm interested to see where all this goes. I really enjoyed it. I love the reveal at the end because I actually, and Marcus is going to punch me the next time he sees me, but I fist bumped, I pumped my fist in the air when she said my name was a master, blah, blah, blah. Cause I thought it was actually very, I thought finally they brought the master back. This doctor, yep. Peter Capaldi, is the new generation. He's the 50th anniversary onward doctor. He's the one that's going to be ushering in this whole new era. They have to have the master in Doctor Who. He's the ultimate evil next to the Daleks, of course, but he's the ultimate arch nemesis to Doctor Who, at least in this kind of humanoid form. And so bringing him back in, or the master, her back in, whatever you want to say now, I think was brilliant. It just may have been, she's not as evil and as dark as she could have been, as the character could have been. You know, we already have a very dark doctor who's slowly becoming more human. And we have Missy, who's almost like an android robot throughout the whole season. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite episodes of the season. But I could definitely see where the issues were.
Did anybody else see the name of the guy who created this heaven? The doctor guy? They're actually Doctor
Chang or Seb?
No, Dr. Scaro something.
Scarosa.
Yeah. Is this another bait and switch? Are we going to get the fucking Daleks next week? Because obviously Scaro is where the Daleks came from.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that seems...
been around with us again.
I think that seems unlikely. I think that's more... If this whole thing is being run by the Master, I think that this is more of like... The Master threw that in there as like a... almost a joke. And remember, the Master has a, you know, some ties to the Daleks as well. I mean, we go back to the 80s movie and the Daleks killed the Master. Like, that was his original, like, final death, quote-unquote final death, was at the hands of the Daleks on Scaro.
We don't talk about the 90s movie. It was 95, I think, but we don't 95. Talk about that particular movie. The only good thing that came out of that was Paul McGann, and his best turn as the Doctor was the 5-minute or the 15-minute webisode that showed him regenerating into the thing. I mean, the poor guy was wasted. I mean, but anytime you have the Daleks executing the Master as part of a galactic council, and then you have the Doctor transporting his remains back to Gallifrey, and then he turns into Terminator 2 Ooze and becomes Eric fucking Robert, that's pretty much a reason to strike the whole movie from the annals of time. You dig?
We've put up with a lot of shit this season. You know, just this season alone, we put up with a lot of crap. Like, I don't know. I'm willing to take on that burden. I'm willing to eat the sin of the Doctor Who 90s TV film for the rest of the world, and I will be the person who acknowledges it and brings it up when it needs to be brought up. I'm willing to take that bullet for everyone.
I think of the many potential swerves coming, I don't think that's going to be one of them. I think that's either more of a, like you're saying, a mess with his mind thing, or more of just like a winky thing at us.
Yeah, I think it's for us.
He loves his jokes, right? Yeah. Like the Master, you know, at least in this modern incarnation, he is kind of constantly making fun of shit, you know, as he's like using it to kill people, like the Toclophane, or Toclophane, right? The Toblerones from the story. Like those were like a Time Lord joke, you know, a Gallifreyan time story or something like that. And used those as like his murder monsters. I think it's something similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that this is some sort of virtual reality thing playing out with the Matrix, or I think, oh god, some sort of dream stuff, which is just going to be the worst if that turns out to be true, or it's a bait and switch and Missy isn't who she says she is.
You guys remember when the Master was absolutely scary? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was probably before most of you were born. I mean,
certainly before I was born.
Roger Delgado days.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, was it Anthony Ainslie after that? I mean, when I think Delgado was killed in a car accident. But those master, you know, those portrayals of the master were the total opposite of the doctor. They didn't have any,
right.
You know, bouncy, crazy, oh, look at me, I'm the lovable loon who wants to kill the world. And, you know, meat, ah, oh, Rob, must have it. You know, the master didn't have the power to, you know, fire beams from his fingers and then fly off like Iron Man after a curry. He was basically the doctor with even less humanity.
Right.
That's all he had. The only emotion he really had was hate and contempt for everything else. None of this fucking drum shit. And, you know, none of this, you know, he's become a pantomime villain. I mean, it's quite literally, it's like, you know, oh, I'm going to kill everybody. Oh, no, you're not. Oh, yes, I am. Ho, ho, ho. And that's the problem. And Russell T. Davis was just as bad. I mean, you know, he turned him into a camp parody of himself, you know, of what the master was. And look, we can't have it 100% serious all the time. Absolutely. But Doctor Who needs some threatening villains. And the master is one of them anymore. The master is the doctor's equal in every way, you know, mentally, you know, IQ wise, blah, 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 physically, you know, neither of them, you know, were the greatest fisticuff fighters. But the fact that the master is devoid of compassion for anybody else, he doesn't give a shit about anybody else. He doesn't give a shit about the Time Lords. And, you know, I mean, the only time he does give a shit about something, perhaps, and that's talking to the doctor. And that's when, you know, the taunting comes in the, you know, very elaborate plans determined to sap his will and break him down. Not the doctor we've seen, the master since since 2005, when it's just been camp caricatures. And it's a shame because, again, you know, and not necessarily we don't need the master. It would have been nice for Missy to be a new big bad who is going to come back over and over again. You know, somebody with a bit of gravity, somebody who didn't have to go, you know, all chewing up the scenery. I mean, that episode was after that, you know, apart from those, you know, first 10 minutes and, you know, some of the bits with Danny, it was more ham and cheese than a French sandwich convention.
See, I don't know. I think I disagree with that. And I feel like, Stephen, have you had a chance to?
No, I have not.
All right, real quick. You know, I think back to the lightning bolt out the face master and all the other insanity we had to deal with there and just the shame of what the character should have been. And then I think to this past episode and I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's a little over the top, but I think it ties in more, at least in my opinion, with the taunting you're talking about, you know, where she pretends to be the droid in the beginning, where she locks Clara upstairs after, you know, the doctor storms away from her, where she kills Dr. Chang, you know, for no reason except she can. You know, and while she taunts him while he's running outside and everything else, like, I don't know. I think there's a potential for some serious gravity there, that I'm hoping that will come in the next episode, you know, because, from the minute that, you know, she walks through the words, I don't know. I thought there was something much more serious about this take on the character.
Sure. And
my hope is that she's written, assuming she is who she says she is, that she's written, now and in the future as the equal that she should be. You know, and as the doctor's arch nemesis and everything else. And I think the foundation is there for that. I think we just need to see the execution. But yeah, Stephen, I know you've been itching to go. So.
Okay, yeah. My analysis of the episode, you're all wrong. The end.
No, you're fired.
Yeah, you're fired. Yeah, no. So I think I come somewhere down in the middle between Marcus and the rest of the team here, which I think I, you know, already said a little bit. I really like the episode. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. I thought that the reveal of the Master was pretty good. I think that Sean, when you said that this version of Master is more serious, certainly more serious than John Sim was, I think anyway, there is a certain sort of irreverence to the Missy Master that, or the Mistress or whatever we're going to call her. Just a master.
I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that she'll, by the time the next episode is around, she'll have a preferred nomenclature or something. Mm-hmm. but she's not like the laughing goofball so much that that John Sim was. She is more serious, if not necessarily, you know, 100% full dark, you know. But regardless of that, sort of my, I think most of the like high points of the episode, I think everybody already said. I like the first 10 minutes, like the Downey Pink stuff was great. But where I kind of disagree is on the low points of the episode. Like, I don't really think that the same low points that Marcus had are the same, my same low points. Mine kind of crystallize into two basic moments. There's the moment early on where the Doctor is in the TARDIS with Clara, and they're talking about, like, go to hell and all that stuff, and she's like, fair, that's absolutely fair. I will just leave, or, you know, all that stuff. And then he has this big spiel about how, you know, do you think our friendship would means really so little to me that I would, you betraying me would make it so that I would give up on you or something like that. The reason that bothers me is because it kind of ties into one of my biggest problems with the character, like the version of Capaldi that they've given us this entire season. And Dally, you know about this, but I don't know if the rest of you guys do. Like, it seems like every episode of Doctor Who for the last like half of this season had had a moment where the Doctor says something completely unfair, something undeserved, that he, like, he has done nothing this season to make me think that he deserves to get to say. And that's this week's moment for me. It's because there's this whole idea of, like, what do you think our friendship means so little to me that I wouldn't, you know, that you betraying me would make any difference? Whereas throughout this whole season, he has been betraying Clara left and right. You know, the whole kill the moon moment, you know, I'm going to leave you here and let you figure everything out. You know, I'm going to sit here and berate you and make fun of the human race this whole time and talk to you about how bad you are. And like Forest of the Night, we're going to talk about how the human race is just forgets everything and it's terrible. And, you know, which is so anti-Doctor Who, I don't even want to think about it. This is an undeserved moment. Like, what right does he have to, you know, come at her and say, like, hey, you betrayed me, you know, like to acknowledge it and say, like, I'm so much better than you because I can forgive you for betraying me, when he's just been a piece of shit this whole season. The other moment that really bothered me was the three words, like, the, you know, the kind of the crux of the episode. And this one is kind of dependent on where things go in the second episode, because the problem with the three words is, like, it is such a nihilistic, like, angry sort of hopeless version of the universe for Doctor Who again. And it's a thing that I think that is, again, finally, I think I know what's been my biggest problem with this version of Capaldi and everything this season. It's been this idea that the Doctor Who, they want to make it darker. They want to take it darker, but their version of darker isn't just to have like higher stakes, which I think I would be fine with. It's taking what makes to me what it, you know, is hugely representative of Doctor Who and like completely throwing it out into the trash. This whole idea that like humanity has, you know, a greater fate than what, you know, we have now. The whole idea that, you know, the humans one day they'll get out into the universe and they'll, you know, survive and they'll spread themselves everywhere. And
they'll be the greatest race. Yep.
Yeah. All these different things that has kind of constantly been a through line throughout all of Doctor Who. It's why the Doctor loves humanity and why the Doctor is where he is all the time. And that's just not present. And in fact, that like their version of, you know, trying to make it edgier has been saying like, well, you know, screw all that.
You're just putting brains.
Yeah. You're just putting brains, and you'll forget everything, and you just do terrible things. And I have no reason to like you, but yet I'm still here because I don't know, because like it's Doctor Who, and I need to be coming to Earth and dealing with humans, I guess. Because
I need a plot point. Yeah.
And then, yeah, I guess Missy Master, like, I don't know, I'm almost positive I had said that exact same thing on an earlier episode talking about Missy, like how Missy was going to be short for Mistress, which was going to be, you know, the female equivalent of Master. Like, nothing about that really bothers me because, like, I don't necessarily know, like, Marcus used the word pandering. I don't know necessarily I would describe that as pandering. Pandering, I think it would have required, like, a certain, I don't know, in-your-faceness about it as opposed to just, like, making it be the plot twist here, and especially with a character that isn't one of the main characters that we're probably not going to see more of past this two-parter here, at least not for a while. I think it's more like they're just addressing a thing that has been a going concern on Doctor Who, or at least a going topic on Doctor Who for a while. Whether that, you know, you like the fact that they addressed it by actually doing it or not, like the fact that they like went into the show and said like, hey, there's this thing that people who watch Doctor Who have been talking about for a long time, and say like doing something with the plot that acknowledges that, I think is absolutely fine. You know, you're free to disagree or agree about like whether or not they should have, you know, by addressing it, they should have like had a one-off line about how it's never going to happen or actually do it, which is the way that they went. But I think it's very important that they actually just did something, anything to just say like, yes, we get it. We know they're not burying their heads in the sand. Stephen Moffat, you know, has a tendency. Sorry,
mate. I hate to interrupt you here, but we are on the pandering trip here. And I'll tell you why. They are responding to the most vocal minorities. This is fucking Gamergate. This is the same thing again.
This is
the
loud
voices on the internet. The same, you know, couple of thousand people who are doing the same bitching over and over and over. It's not a case of talking to the silent majority. It's not about talking to the other 10, 12, 14, 20, whatever it is, millions of people who are quite happy with, you know, the way things are, you know, the way things are, and are really open to seeing some new strong female characters, because let's face it, Moffat can't write those for shit. He started off so well with River Song, and then she went up her own river. I mean, you look what happened with, you know, the Ponds. I mean, he cannot write strong female characters. But this current trend of, oh, well, we're loud, we're on the internet, and we're on Twitter, and we're going to hashtag lady whatever it is, because we deserve, you know, we deserve X, Y, and Z. That's pandering. That is, you know, oh, we're going to retcon absolutely every single aspect of stuff because we don't agree with it, even though it's been going on for the last 50 years. You know, stuff does evolve. Doctors do change. The companions have gotten better from the whole, you know, screaming. That's all they do is scream and look good in short skirts. They changed back in the 1970s when Sarah Jane Smith came on board. She
was the doctor. As a side note, that's why we have Sean on the show, to scream and look good in a short skirt.
Right. I mean, I went to Dali once and I said, Dali, we need some sex appeal on this show. I know this guy. His name is Sean Norton. Let me tell you.
Hey, man, what can we say? But
I actually do want to just interject real quick to say, like, that is one point I really do agree with you on, Marcus. Like, I absolutely think that in general, you know, female, not female, Doctor Who needs new villains. It needs new villains. It needs new ongoing villains that are actual like characters that appear, and not just like, hey, we're gonna have the silence and then we're gonna run them into the ground by, you know, two seasons later. Like a new equivalent of the Ranai or a new equivalent of the Master would be great. Like,
well, who is it? The Dream Lord, was that the character that we thought could have been a really cool guy, or that bounty hunter, that bounty hunting race? That was.
Have gotten some cool new villains,
but he doesn't do anything with them.
Well, I mean, you know, returning to the well of what's popular and what's, you know, what's worked and what's iconic. I mean, it's not like we've got the Daleks rounding out the season, right? Like, you know,
Cybermen.
Oh, Cybermen, yes, but you know, I can appreciate Moffat. You know, he's used them in, you know, sparingly, but they haven't really dominated a finale or had their own crazy good story, which hopefully this turns into. Since what? 2006?
Maybe, seven? Six, seven.
You know, but in between, we've had Weeping Angels, which, again, is run to the ground, but they were new. Silence was run to the ground, but new. a couple weeks ago, we had the 2D, you know, the second dimension monsters.
The Boneless.
Before that, you know, I can't think of specifics right now, but the point is, we have had, like, the Mummy and the Orient Express was new. That was pretty cool. You know, there's good stuff sprinkled in there. It's just, it's hard to forget it because the iconic, you know, older enemies are returning to round out the seasons and stuff.
So, very specifically, but though, I want, like, new characters. Like, new, not, like, a villainous race or something like that. I want, like, a new equivalent of the Rana,
sure,
or a new
equivalent
of the Master, or Rassilon, or whoever you want. Somebody who, like, gives the Doctor somebody to play off of instead of, like, just this big evil force, which I think is, you know, the big evil force was, you know, it's a byproduct of the Daleks, because the Daleks were created in a time where, you know, Nazi Germany and the bombings of London were very much, you know, very fresh in everybody's minds. And the idea of this giant fascist force that was unstoppable in just terms of sheer size and like trying to convert you or, you know, kill you, you know, was definitely the prevailing thing. But like, I think in this, you know, more modern time, like, you know, it's more about, you know, something that would be more interesting for me is like the idea, him fighting ideas. And the best way to, I think, for some of you to fight ideas is if you have a character that strongly believes in what they're doing for whatever reason, and mm-hmm. putting someone else who believes something very different against them, and having those two go to work on each other, which we haven't really seen much of.
Hey, Steven? We also want a full regeneration without the Master being involved at all. Yeah. Wasn't even whispered about during Matt Smith's run. So... Yep. And we had almost a whole season of this.
Go on, sorry. I'm
confused. Yeah, okay. But I think there's a difference, you know, there's just a difference of opinion on what's overused and what's not. So, but I totally respect that. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, Stephen, repeat after me, Ronnie.
Ronnie?
Yes, please. Ronnie. Thank you. Thank Ronnie. You.
Oh, okay, yeah. Whatever. I say Hearthstone instead of Hearthstone. Everybody gets mad at me for that.
It's Ronnie. Trust me on this one, Ronnie, okay?
I've never seen an episode with her, so I don't know. Yeah.
The points that were made about, you know, some of the cool monsters we've seen this season, they had one amazing link. Mm-hmm. They were Moffat-free scripts. And this is the problem. Moffat has become a guy who has... Let's be generous and say a dozen good ideas. And unfortunately, after he's got a dozen ideas, are how do we reuse these ones?
Right.
It shows that he's just gotten to the end of, you know, his creative whatever. I mean, you know, we do need new villains.
Yeah,
a wide variety, and yes, it is tough to write 12 new villains every freaking year plus a Christmas special, and you have to go back to the well. But you can go back to the well in, you know, in so many different ways. There is stuff that they haven't even tapped into from the original series that is, you know, they're all just sitting there. I mean, you know, we've never really, you know, explored. You know, some of the stuff like, you know, some of the more admittedly bizarre stuff like the Yeti.
Yeah.
And you go back to, you know, but I mean, some of the wilder stuff. And of course, the, you know, the ultimate big bad that is sort of like shared a theme between Moffat and Davis is Gallifrey. And Gallifrey has been back, but nothing's happened for a fucking season.
Right.
Almost 12 months ago. We were watching Gallifrey return, and we, you know, we had the pinnacle of, you know, the Doctor Who, you know, reboot, because it was one of the best episodes, and it served mm-hmm. the fanboys, and it ticked every single fucking box, and it was great. Since then, we've gone from Bread of Heaven to dining on crumbs in the sewer.
Actually, like when I was watching this episode, and like right before they made the, you know, the reveal of Missy Mistress Master or whatever, I was kind of thinking like, okay, well, that's Time Lord technology. Somebody's brought Time Lord technology back. She's talking about how she's the one that got left behind, the one that you left behind, or something like that. I kept thinking like, is this going to be Evil Romana? That was my kind of theory for a hot minute there. Was just like, maybe this is how they finally tie us back to Gallifrey. Like, you know, another Time Lord that we had before that has shown up again. And then, yeah, obviously that wasn't the case. But like, I was kind of really, really hoping it was going to tie into Gallifrey just totally directly like that.
We don't know if it hasn't yet, though.
That is true, too.
Well, you know, there's a lot of preemptive hate here, which might be justified by the end of next week. But this
on my part. I'm just saying that I would love
to see. There's a lot of Moffat hate here, and it's going into a lot of the overarching stuff with villains and reveals and all this, you know, season-ending stuff, which, again, could be completely justified at the end of next week's 60 minutes or whatever.
Yes.
But I think there's too much preemptive hate here for a Missy reveal that came in the last 10 seconds of the episode.
I just take issue with the word hate. Like, I'm not hating anything. Like I said, I like this episode a lot. I'm just saying like things that I would like to see to have the show improve. I wouldn't be talking about it on this podcast. If I hated it, would I be talking about, you know, I wouldn't be doing this podcast at all. I'd be going and doing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, which I should do anyway. But
updated by, you know, these new enemies, the Church of Papal Silence and the Silence and all this stuff. Now, granted, they weren't very good, but they did dominate the two arcs that we did have before everything led up into the, you know, the 50th and the Doctor split timeline and everything like that. So again, I think that we absolutely could have room for more, you know, variety, more bigger bads, you know, new bigger bads, I should say. But at the same time, I still think it's a little unfair to say we haven't had that because, you know, season 5 and 6 and then the end of Smith's terrible, terrible season finale, all played into that. Like it all played into the Church, which we had never seen before, the Silence, which we had never seen before, you know, and stuff like that. So.
By the way, speaking of that terrible, terrible season finale, the promotional images that they used for Dark Water had the Doctor holding a Cyberman head, much like Handel's.
And by the way, for those of us that might say that this was one of the worst, I think we are too quick to forget some of Matt Smith's real stinkers, including his final episode, which I rewatched in light of all this.
Yeah.
And man, was that not good.
Oh, like,
really not good.
No arguments for me. I think last week's episode before this one was actually maybe the worst episode of Doctor Who I've ever seen.
Maybe.
Yeah. Really bad.
You definitely need to go and watch some of the one or two of the Sylvester McCoy ones. You know, when on the way. But look, I'll agree with you that, you know, things could change. Yeah. I mean, it would take, in my opinion, the greatest comeback since Lazarus for this. This season to be judged a success by the end of the 60 minutes next week. And it's simply because my tastes haven't changed. I still love Doctor Who. I still watch the old stuff. I still go through and I can even forgive, some of the more dodgy Matt Smith episodes. But unfortunately, you know, it's got this era was the same as well. For every Waters of Mars, you know, there was the the End of Time, which was not, you know, a great finale. And then you know every 50th anniversary from Moffat or Silence in the Library, or, you know, any of the other the brilliant ones he wrote when he wasn't a showrunner, we've had a lot of dross from him. I think, you know, it did pick up mid-season, you know, for me. We got back to some of the more admittedly bizarre stuff, but Mummy on the Orient Express, Kill the Moon, they were good ones. Episodes that were just self-encompassing and were great, and we all obviously thought, oh well, are we going to go off and see so-and-so again in heaven? And that's great because it got us thinking. But now we've gotten to this, you know, the finale, and on the whole, this season's not been a huge great success. I mean, I don't think, you know, I know a lot of you liked the one where it was, you know, Clara under the bed grabbing the Doctor's ankle, and that was ooh, what a mind fuck.
God, I hated that ending. Oh my god, just to reiterate from like five, six episodes.
That's my problem. I mean, let's go back to Dark Water. If I hadn't seen the promotional pictures, I would have to have been deaf, dumb, and blind to not realize it was the Cyberman, because every single window was shaped like a Cyberman's eye.
Yeah, exactly.
So the company logo shaped like a Cyberman's eye. I mean, in the grand scheme of, yes, this is a, you know, the first part of a two-parter, so we're only halfway through. But so much of it doesn't make any sense. And unfortunately, my personal, you know, feeling with Moffat's track record is we are not going to get any closure. The girl in the timeline, you know, Clara Oswald, the impossible girl, the girl in the timeline. All of a sudden, that fucking disappeared. Gallifrey, that fucking disappeared. I mean, you know, he's great at the foreplay, but he cannot bring you all the way home. Not anymore. Not unless it is a two-parter in somebody else's, controlled season. And that, you know, that's, look, I say it week after week after week, and I've been positive the last couple of episodes because I thought the episodes were great. The Foresty one, I mean, I think we should pass a law right now that should be you cannot have more than one child in an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of it a good. I mean, like Nightmare and Silver wasn't terrible, but like the kids in that were not the best part of that.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, it's one of those things that is, you know, it is a show, was a show predominantly for kids, but they've moved it up the time slot to make it a little darker and, you know, more appealing to adults. And I think by doing that, they've shown that Moffat perhaps cannot really handle that. I mean, he cannot do that week in and week out without somebody like Mark Gatiss to hold, you know, to rein him in. And, you know, I think you don't necessarily need to have kids on a show perhaps aimed at kids. And we know the demographic of Doctor Who has moved. I mean, the kids who were watching it 30 years ago, like me, or 40 years ago, are now, you know, in our 40s. And there are people older than me in their 50s and 60s who have been watching it since. Yes, it's changed. Doctor Who is kind of, on the whole, this season, stopped being fun.
Yeah.
It stopped being that bit of, you know, escapism, why, you know, great, you know, adventures all over the place. It's become this just repeating on us like a bad curry. And I think that's sad. I mean, you can go dark and do it really well. You know, I mean, it's ironic, actually. Batman Begins is currently on the TV in front of me. And, you know, you compare that to maybe the Joel Schumacher Batmans. And you show that you can still go dark and make something that's smart and entertaining and appealing to all ages with a frigging Batman character. So why can't you do it with the Doctor? And I just don't think that Moffat's capable of it.
I think they've been like I was saying earlier, like the whole dark versus, like, I don't think they've gone dark. I think they thought they were going dark and or mature or something like that. And what they did instead was they just went nihilistic. They went pessimistic. Yeah. Like, it is just so, like I've said before, like Doctor Who to me, like you use the term escapism. I like the term just optimism. I like the idea of that saying, like, yo, everything's might be okay. Like, they're not, Doctor Who doesn't actually necessarily say that everything is okay, because obviously it addresses a lot of, like, you know, things that happen in real life and a lot of things that, you know, there have, you know, even going back to the old stuff, like there's stuff about environmental concerns and other things. But usually what ends up happening is that the Doctor is there to try and inspire people to do better. And in the early Russell T. Davies series, the seasons, whatever, it was, you know, here's some characters that we show you that things do get better, you know, that everything, you know, can work out in the end. And this season has just been like, you're taking a piss all over that. Like, there have been some good examples of good episodes regardless. I think Clara has really, really come out on into her own as that sort of, you know, waving that flag. But then every so often Capaldi just has to come out and, like, be right about being, you know, about something that I think he's wrong about in this, like, super pessimistic way. And it's just, yeah, that's not dark. That's just, that is just, you know, being angry at the world. And I just do not like that.
Well, let's, I know Sean has to take off here, but I think we've all had our kind of 60 seconds plus to comment on the episode. So let's do a quick review of, let's see, how many words out of five words would you rate this episode? Then we're going to dive into some of the our reader or listener feedback. So
words out of words?
Words out of words. Number of words out of, well, three words, but how many words out of five words? Steven.
I think, come back to me.
Okay. Sean?
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Okay, Marcus.
Gotta go. Bye.
I love how he bailed before even start. Let me just say, by the way, dark water is something that comes out of your ass when you have dysentery. For the first 10 minutes, it could have been a 4.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. The next 30 minutes could have been a 1.5 out of 5. So I'm going to go with a 2 out of 5.
Ooh, wow.
And the two words are, fuck you.
That's the two words, Moffat. I'm going to go with a 4 out of 5, with mine being I really liked it. Steven?
I'm going to go ahead and say 3.5 out of 5. I did like it. I still have problems with like this weird celebration of Capaldi's like pessimism and all that stuff. I think Clara is better than him. And you know what? I kind of avoided getting into this because I didn't want to make a thing out of it. But like, I kind of disagree with Marcus just in general about the whole like vocal minority versus the, you know, silent majority, that sort of thing. I think there are two pretty well-defined factions almost in this sort of thing. And like, even comparing it to like a certain hate group out there, I don't think is necessarily fair either, because it's one, you know, regardless of how whether you agree or disagree with this one, at least this group is, you know, they're fighting for something that they actually think is like worthwhile, as opposed to just saying fuck you to the other person, which, you know, I like I said, I don't kind of want to make a big thing of this on the podcast or anything like that, but I do actually kind of appreciate the addressing of a certain thing on the show.
Dude, having seen some of the things that were posted before Picard Capaldi was announced as the new Doctor, it was downright obscene. And I'm not talking about the people who are, you know, I'm talking both sides. So both sides were sin, as much sinned against as sinning. But again, I mean, my mum has been a Doctor Who fan since before I was born. She got me into Doctor Who.
Sure.
She doesn't want to see a female Doctor. Why? Because it will break the show. Because a female Doctor with a female companion is never really going to work, because they balance themselves out. I mean, you need a better quality of writer than exists in science fiction today, on British television today. We do have some amazing writers from the UK who can write killer female characters. I mean, you go back to Prime Suspect and Lynn. I mean, there have always been some amazing female characters. But I'm also for giving giving and creating brilliant new female characters to challenge the existing male characters. I'm not a fan of, you know, and look, I am the middle-aged straight white guy. I'm the fucking enemy right now. But, you know, it's true. I am the enemy because there are people who've come to Doctor Who in the last, you know, three, four, five years, whatever. As soon as Doctor Who got pretty, they've come in and it's like, oh, squee, fantastic. And it's like, so anybody who's been a longtime supporter gets kicked to the curb and gets their viewpoints, you know, destroyed as misogyny and blah blah blah. I'm not a misogynist. I am not sexist. I am, you know, my wife, if anybody's met my wife.
You're Welsh. That's basically...
No, I mean, I'm not even joking about this, because it's really beginning to piss me off that there is, you know, there's this fucking movement who insists that everything has to be changed to their standards, and fuck everybody else. Yes, we can evolve, but we can evolve by improving and adding to, not totally throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And that is my problem with this particular movement. You put a female doctor in there, and then you're going to have to go with a male companion. And then it's then it gets creepy, because then all of a sudden the male's is he gonna, you know, fall in love with the doctor? Is he gonna be hitting on her? I mean, let's face it, this all went tits up when the doctor became Rose Tyler fell in love with him, and he fell in love with her, and it stopped being about an alien who loves humanity, and it became a kitchen sink drama, and it's just gone on from there with Amy Pond. Is she with Rory? Is she with the doctor? Clara, she loved her man with this skinny suit, and now she's gone off to Danny Pink because the man with the skinny suit isn't there anymore. And that's not the sci-fi we always, we need, to be honest with you.
I don't...
everywhere else.
I don't necessarily disagree that, like, you know, romance should maybe have, like, a lesser role in Doctor Who. I kind of actually... probably even do agree with that, to be honest, but I also don't think that necessarily you have to say, you know, I don't think this is exactly what you're trying to say. I don't think this is what you're getting at, but just like as a point that I'd like to make, I don't think you can necessarily if the Doctor, you know, whatever, became a Time Lady or, you know, regenerated into a woman or whatever, it doesn't necessarily have to be a romantic relationship with the, you know, male and male companion or the male-female companion or female-female companion, whatever, you know, they end up doing or would end up doing in that situation, that is. I think they should just, if that's going to be the case, they just write that out. Like, if they don't think that they can handle that properly, then they should just not do that part, like the romance part, that is. I also don't know that necessarily it's creepier to have a male companion, you know, hitting on the Doctor than a female companion. Like, you know, Amy Pond hitting on the Doctor pretty graphically for Doctor Who, mm-hmm. I guess. Graphically mm-hmm. is the right word, I guess, but, you know, with, like, implying that she wants to have sex with him in that earlier episode in Matt Smith's run.
The night before she was supposed to get married.
Yeah. I think that was, like, you know, that's about as, like, high level as that stuff gets on Doctor Who. But I don't know that necessarily, like, you know, if that had been the other way around, it would have been somehow worse by itself. You know, if the Doctor had reacted in the exact same way that the Doctor reacted in this episode, you know, in that episode.
Again, it just seems to wear a little thin. I mean, since the Doctor's returned, we've had the companions, and I'll reel them off. We've had Rose, we've had Martha, we've had Donna, we've had Amy, we've had Clara. The only one who hasn't fallen in love with the Doctor or fancied the Doctor in any way, shape, or form and has been the best companion for it, in my opinion, is Donna Noble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So looking at 1 out of 5. That, and so what in the most recent history of the show and what it's done and how it's handled this, what gives any credence to the idea that, oh, they will be able to handle it? Because they haven't been able to handle it. They've always fallen back on it because it's cheap and it's easy to write.
Right. No, I still kind of agree with that. I think it is kind of a cheap way of building drama that they, you know, that they've used. I think, again, it's something that, like, even the Donna Noble thing, they address it right off the bat. You know, it's not something where they need to necessarily, like, go down that road, and nor should they do it. But, like, the fact that, you know, right off the bat with Donna, you know, they have that moment where they're saying, like, they talk about it. They don't just pretend that it doesn't happen. It's like, you know, going back to Marvel stuff, Captain America: The Winter Soldier. There's this scene where, early on in the film, where, like, Black Widow and Captain America are together, and they make some kind of reference to the fact that they are both very attractive people who are in a situation together, but then, like, make it pretty clear that neither of them has any feelings for the other. But they're not stupid, you know. It's not like two, you know, healthy young people are looking at each other and, like, not recognizing that they are attractive. And I'm not saying that necessarily, you know, Doctor Who has to have that kind of same tenor to it. Just the idea that it's something that gets addressed mm-hmm. when it is a part of what is happening in that scene. You know, two healthy young people, you know, assuming, you know, a Matt Smith or a David Tennant in that case, and a Donna Noble, they talk about it. You know, they get out of the way right off the bat and they move on with it. That said, I totally agree with you that they've never necessarily done anything that makes me feel like they could handle it. But the idea that, like, somebody has to try at some point, right? Not necessarily on Doctor Who, but, like, there's a certain point in, like, when people are doing fiction in general, and, like, if you just keep saying, like, well, if they did it, they would just do it wrong. Well, then they should get somebody who could do it right and bring them onto Doctor Who. You know, get some writer who is well known for doing things properly. If they wanted to go in that direction, get somebody who could do it right. And maybe not Moffat, if you don't want Moffat. You know, there are, I'm sure, people in Britain who, like you pointed out yourself, who have written strong female characters and stuff like that. So if that was a decision that the creative, you know, department of Doctor Who decided that they wanted to go down, they should just get somebody who could. You know, there's no shortage of talented people who probably aren't getting their shot right now out there who might be able to do it for them, and, you know, just bring them on.
I mean, look, and just I'm going to throw this back out there again. Since the reboot, one, the Doctor has fallen in love with Rose,
right?
And in his next regeneration, he married the daughter of his companions, who was conceived in the TARDIS.
Yeah,
right.
And again, I mean, the Rose
kind of was, you know, was a little bit kind of come on. But I mean, the whole marriage of River Song, and that was just, it was trite. And look, maybe somebody will be able to nail it. Maybe, you know, there is a showrunner, male or female, who can, you know, execute that. Moffat's definitely not the guy, because Moffat's only experience of writing any sort of male-female relationships was the bloody show Coupling, which was a comedy. And, you know, they're either vamps or they're, you know, wallflowers who lust after Sherlock from afar. I mean, right. You know, can't write in between. And again, I would say that the time is right to definitely expand beyond the female companion. I mean, we were nervous about Danny Pink, but I think he's kind of worked out all right in a kind of tertiary, tucked away kind of way. But we have Romana. We have, you know, we've had Leela in the past, who was a warrior. I mean, she was there, you know, this savage in the Baker years, who, you know, would try and kill things just for the sheer fun of it. But, you know, we have the Rani. I mean, there are plenty of characters we can bring in who can absolutely fulfill that particular need and evolve the show. I mean, look, we had, you know, early day in Eccleston's season, we had Captain Jack Harkness, the first openly omnisexual whatever, and he kissed the Doctor. And, you know, there was stuff alluded to, and we all had a good chuckle, forgot about it, and moved on. But it's just becoming kind of getting sick of getting smacked over the head time and time again with the same thing, just because there is a new group who've come to this who barely know Doctor Who prior to 2006 even. I mean, you know, there are people who didn't really watch the Eccleston stuff because he was a jug-eared northern git. But then Doctor Who got pretty and people started watching.
Let's not forget that the Eccleston stuff was also on Sci-Fi at the time, as opposed to, you know, its own station, BBC, which Sci-Fi has its own problems as like a product that tries to sell products to other people.
It's the home of fucking Sharknado, dude. I mean, that's all you have.
Yeah.
But look, I want Doctor Who to evolve. I want it to grow. I want better villains. I want better storylines. I want better companions. I want to be able to see more, you know, great female characters come through. I just don't want them to just recycle all the time. I mean, I'm environmentally friendly, but this is taking the piss.
I think that's one place we can both agree, is that we just want better from Doctor Who in general, whatever that means. We want Doctor Who to be better than what it's been this season, but kind of under Moffat's thumb for quite a while at this point. It deserves better. Like the character in the universe deserves better in some form or another.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Doctor Who's at his best when, honestly, the companion doesn't fall in love with him.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we've had some of these this year, because it's almost been like a post-breakup with Clara. And, you know, she's got this new guy, and she, you know, she's in love with him, and she can't understand how the other guy's changed. And that is really, that's been, you know, again, some of the strong, shining moments. But anywho, look,
that was so good this season, yeah.
Yeah. Before we end, I just want to read a few comments from some of our wonderful Twitter followers. We tweeted out what people thought of the episode. And here were some of the lovely comments. Alan Paxton at Alan Paxton on Twitter says, "Holy shit, I have no words for it. Can't wait for the next podcast because there's a lot to digest here. Although I know a certain member of the group's going to be pissed." Cough. Annoyed gamer, cough. At Costa says, "And we have payoff on the Capaldi Doctor Who season." Alan Paxton also says, "Called it, knew this episode would piss him off." Pure Lionheart says, "Called it, but I don't like it." Alan also writes, "I thought they were creating a new big bad, but makes sense in a weird way. The episode lost its edge after they land in 3W. Era Kozakowski, or at The Redux, says, "Not surprised whatsoever." Josh Hyde at Vertimist says, "So, when are you guys going to do a podcast after part two? Looking forward to hearing Annoyed Gamer rant about the reveal." And Annalise says, at sublevel 28, says, going to be an interesting Lonely TARDIS this week, considering the tweets of the lads. Yes, this is very true. Savior Prodigy tweets out, wow, never expected that reveal at the end of the episode. Moffat lies, which is exactly what you said, Marcus, earlier in the show.
Everybody knows Moffat lies. I mean, he said he lied.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Lying bastard, yeah.
And finally, at Scott Nixon says, hope Marcus is in today. Want to hear him rage. So there's a lot of...
Well, yeah, I should point out that, like, I feel like we had a pretty civil conversation here, which I'm, you know, not shocked that we, you know, did. We're all adults here, whether we disagree or not. But, yeah, I don't necessarily know that, like, a lot of people, start over. A lot of people are, like, talking about Marcus raging as if, like, you know, it almost sounds dismissive in a certain way, like that he's just going to be upset about it. But I think there is an actual discussion to be had in here, and I think we had part of that right now. I think we just kind of proved that it is civil. It is possible to have a civil discussion about this, right?
Sometimes. With that said, we're going to get to the next episode next week, the finale of this season next week, which is called Death in Heaven, which I'm sure will leave us either torn apart as a group or back together hugging and joyfully celebrating the wonder of Doctor Who. We'll find out at 10 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. With that said, you can follow Lonely TARDIS on Twitter at Lonely TARDIS. Please visit our website, LonelyTARDIS.com, and check out the cool articles that we post up there, the discussions. Listen to the show. Rate and review us on iTunes, which is always helpful. And you can, as you can tell, my voice is almost completely gone. I've been fighting a cold, so a pretty nasty cold. So I haven't been speaking as much this week, but the goal is to get hopped up on medicine tonight so I can have a fully functional vocal cord or vocal cords next week. So, but you can find me on Twitter typing away my thoughts at Dolly Domofsky. You can find Sean Norton at Sean Norton. Steven, where can we find you?
You can find me at Steven Strom, Stevenstrom. I think I already said last time where my current writing is, so there you go.
And Marcus?
You'll find me quietly crying in the corner. No, you'll find me making love to my Stephen Moffat love pillow.
Oh, okay, sure. All
right. Moffitty. You can find me at Annoyed Gamer. And look, I love the show. I mean, you know, I've always had the show. It was my first TV love and has always been my number one TV love. And, you know, I get overprotective. I get overcritical. But, I mean, you know, go back a couple of weeks and I really was enjoying that middle section. And I think that we just need to thank Stephen Moffat for his time presenting with a gold clock. Put him gently out the door, preferably on the 23rd floor.
What if Moffat just became like the Ray Harryhausen of Doctor Who, and he just came in and invented a monster and let other people write those monsters for him?
Write them better. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll discuss that at length in this off season, because there'll be a lot of news breaking between now and Christmas and the future of the show. So
do we know what the break this is between obviously Christmas, right? But like after Christmas, do we know how long it's going to be before New
Year? No, I've been hearing it's going to be pretty similar though. August, September timeframe again.
That's fine. We can just move on with our plan then, the one we've discussed before of watching some of the older
classics,
if you will, and deciding, oh, okay, well, let's talk about this particular episode.
Yeah.
You know, because there are so many great ones. They're on iTunes. So, you know, perhaps that's what we can do. And then, you know, we can go back and I can show you how bad.
we'll watch the worst episodes of Doctor Who and then.
Oh man. Oh, that actually sounds like a great idea. Yep. Instead of watching like the episodes that we actually should watch, let's watch the terrible garbage that came out.
Yeah, I want to pick out one of the worst episodes and then I actually want to put a camera on Steven as he walks and crumple.
On that note,
man,
that'll be the end of the show. I would sing us off, but again, my pipes are shot. Steven, I'm going to rely on you to get us going here.
To get us going?
Get us going.
Well, I can noise us out if you
want. Okay, yeah, let's do Marcus says you haven't stuck around long enough on the episode to noise us out, so.
Okay.
All right, ready?
Yep.
Yep. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's the stuff.
That was my Doctor Who trash can.
Your
trash can. Wife got it for me from Think Geek last year, and it's in the games room, and you know it's one of those flip lids ones. You lift the lid up, and you get the noises.
So that's how Stephen Moffat recycles old plots.
Oh!
Adios. Thanks for joining us. See you guys later.